On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It is 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time here on the in the Eastern Time Zone, and before we know it, it will be 9. These shows have a way of flying past us, and I think it's because of the nature of what we do here. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com, a little something we like to call conversation radio. It's really not like anything else going out there, I don't think. Much more neighborly, much more relaxed, much more, you know, chatting over the back fence or on the front porch, but it ain't Friday yet. No. This is unique. I don't think you're going to find this in many other places, and God knows you won't find it in the world of the authoritarian right wing where people have to be told what to think. This is progressive conversation, liberal conversation. And it's available only on the internet and perhaps a few little, pirate radio stations out there that aren't afraid of, $475,000 per repetition of the word booger fines that can be levied. If you're willing to be a pirate radio station in the first place, well, you know, I mean, just say. No, The Horn is available on the internet. It's available in a wide variety of places. It's available, of course, first and foremost at headonradionetwork.com, a website that you will notice is not just absolutely choked with a whole bunch of banner advertising and stuff like that. We try to resist the commercial impulse here because we want to keep what we're doing here in focus. It is about the content. It is about the conversation. It is about, in short, you. And so we're not trying to deliver you product. Most commercial broadcasting, look, if it, we all know the movie Idiocracy. The number one movie in the land in Idiocracy is a movie called Ass, and that's all it is 2 hours of a guy's butt. Well, believe you me, in 2012, if commercial broadcasters thought that there were a few million people who would tune in for that, they would put it on TV and they would hang advertisements all around it. Right? Yeah. But we don't do that here at The Horn. Instead, we rely on your determination to see that we are able to continue doing what it is that we do, and we do the best at trying to do what we do. And you have all responded wonderfully to the very real news that we are in a financial hard place. And I'm proud to see that. We've actually gone past the halfway mark for September's fundraising before we got to the halfway mark of September. I don't remember when that's happened before. But we are all of us who make this little effort happen. Extremely grateful to you for making it happen for other people. Because that's the other thing about the model here at The Horn. It's predicated on the fact that there are some people out there who can't contribute. And you make The Horn possible by your contribution. You make The Horn possible for those people. And it is immensely appreciated. I can tell you that. But no, The Horn is available on a wide variety of platforms. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. The stream link is also available at whiterosesociety.org. You can find us on TuneIn Radio and Tuner Internet Radio and Stitcher Radio. We try to make this as available as possible, to the point of almost ubiquity. because this, what you're listening to, is the future. There will, I suppose, always be terrestrial airwaves, but the right wing has completed an almost chokehold on them to the point that there's just... God, have you tried to listen to the music on the radio lately? Yuck. And, of course, the politics is all right wing. So there's just not much on the terrestrial radio anymore. And the few places that do carry progressive content struggle to survive. And that's a fact. So thank you for joining us, either live or by podcast or on the rerun stream. It is all appreciated. you guys are in rare form. Ray, right out of the gate. Yeah, but you could throw in some ass, Bob. And then Michael, ass. Isn't that the most popular or at least most distributed AM radio show for the past two decades? Idiocracy done been here. See ya. Going to Starbucks. Well, at least you're not going to H&R Block. Michael, I mean, I just don't think we have time. I mean, we all like it, but no. So get the horn however you wish, and chime in any time. I love to read your thoughts. I love to share your email with the rest of the Horn family, and I hope that you will feel a greater participatory urge. We are very welcoming here to first-time callers or infrequent callers. We will make our every effort to make you comfortable, and no one's ever had to call 911 because a first-time caller passed out or anything. If you can't do a radio conversation on the horn, well, you know. But you can, and so I encourage your participation. It is Tuesday, and here in the last couple of months, we have come up with a name for Tuesday. This is, of course, Titanic Tuesday. So named because of the story that our buddy Jim told one evening about the 32,622nd tier right-wing blabber over in Beckley who referred to the Titanic plates that move around on the Earth. Yeah, you know, the Titanic plates like you get at Franklin Mint. Sharp bunch, those repiglickens. You know, sharp like in, oh, I don't know, sharp like in a bowling ball is sharp. Yeah, it is. It's Titanic Tuesday. We focus on some of the more brilliant aspects of the right wing. And we've got them tonight. Lord, yes, we do. We've got some, there's a little bit of legalism. You know, to be right wing is to be bigoted. One kind of goes with the other, I guess. And we've got an example that just won't quit. You'll see what I mean. It's out of Pennsylvania. And it's really fun when people who understand what it is that they're looking at actually go and do some legal reading. So most of the time it's awfully dull and terribly dry, but sometimes it yields up a real gem once. I mean, the stuff that just sparkles, you find a diamond in the dung. And such, as it turns out, is the case in Pennsylvania, you know, with Pittsburgh in the west and Philadelphia in the east and Alabama in the middle. Thank you, Rick Smith. Have you ever checked out Rick Smith? He's my colleague and my buddy here on the horn. He follows at 9 p.m., and even if you can't listen to him live, I highly encourage you to download his podcast and check him out. He deserves to be recognized as probably one of the best progressive talkers in the entire United States, bar none. But, it was Rick who told me about Pennsylvania being Pittsburgh in the west and Philadelphia in the east and Alabama in the middle, and I think he's right. He was afraid he'd actually hurt my feelings saying that. No, Rick. It turns out that a woman by the name of Nicole Flatow did some researching on the Pennsylvania voter ID law decision. And what a lulu it was. Nicole Flatow is over at Think Progress at, Think Progress Justice. And the voter ID law there, if we understand, of course, that the reason we're talking about the voter ID laws is because the Republicans absolutely have got to have these things in order to suppress the vote and keep progressives and liberals away from the polls, because that's the only way that Bishop Willard Romney has a chance. The Pennsylvania voter ID law was upheld in trial court. It is now on its way to the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania. And in the trial court's ruling, they cited an innocuous-looking 18, because they all look innocuous when you just see them in there underlined with the 392 PA 421, blah, 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 citation there. It looks all terribly legal and nerdy and legally wonky and right. But then you go and read it and you go, woohoo, oh, we have a winner. And that's apparently what happened with Nicole Flatow. Nicole Flatow ran across an article by Professor Jesse Allen analyzing the 1869 Patterson versus Barlow case that was cited by the trial court as a reason to uphold Pennsylvania's voter suppression voter ID law. And it is. It's a lulu. Ms. Flatow cites Professor Jesse Allen as saying that Patterson versus Barlow serves as a blatant example of the anti-democratic voter suppression alleged by plaintiffs in the current voter ID case. In other words, by reaching back to 1869, and anytime you see 1869 in a voter case, you got to think, that's not a really, really progressive period in American history. Maybe there's some ugly crap in there. Crap, by the way, comes to us from the Low Dutch, not Anglo-Saxon. Just saying. I've been learning all kinds of stuff lately. The opinion in Patterson versus Barlow created a more difficult voting procedure for people in Philadelphia than for people in rural Pennsylvania counties. Why? Because Philadelphia had a great big working class and a burgeoning immigrant population. So the court, in setting up a different voting scheme for Philadelphia than for the rest of Pennsylvania, did so with the following reasoning, citing the following facts as reasoning behind setting up a, separate but equal, where have we heard that before, voting system in Pennsylvania. The problem with Philadelphia, the 1869 court in Patterson versus Barlow found, the problem with Philadelphia is that in Philadelphia there were, and I quote, rogues and strumpets. Yeah. Moreover, it was a matter of reverse reasoning, however, because they were talking about the good and decent people of the farming countryside of Pennsylvania. You know, the Alabama part. And they said that out there in the hinterlands, rogues and strumpets do not nightly traverse the deserted highways of the farmer. Low inns, restaurants, sailors' boarding houses, and houses of ill fame do not abound in rural precincts, ready to pour out on election day their pestilent hordes. You kind of got to read it like that. I mean, because what happened to me when I was reading this story the first time doing show prep earlier today? I read that, and that voice was inside my head, I kid you not. It was Bugs Bunny wrapped up in the ermine cloak. Arise, sirloin of beef.
Arise, Satchmel of Armstrong.
Well, you can just hear those elitist 1% pricks in Harrisburg, can't you? We cannot have these rogues and strumpets voting as they nightly traverse the deserted highways of the farmer. Low inns. Low inns? Because I guess these guys all stayed at the high inns, right?
Restaurants, sailors' boarding houses, and houses of ill fame.
God. You read it, and you know, this was written in total seriousness as a reason to keep people, to make it harder to vote in Philadelphia in 1869. I'm surprised it doesn't say, not to mention recently freed Negroes.
Ron and Raleigh gets it. He's down with the vibe. He says, what? Were there blackguards and poltroons as well?
No. There were blackguards and poltroons. Avast!
Jim noting, who you calling a strumpet? I've been called that and thought it was a compliment. I thought it was something that you played Purcell's Voluntary on. Oh, no, that's a trumpet.
My goodness gracious.
Poltroons.
Because, see, the 1% thinks, acts, and talks like that. It would be much simpler if they would go ahead and just, you know, keep the strumpets and blackguards in the... Right? But that wasn't all in this case of Patterson versus Barlow. As the
rogues and strumpets are ready to pour out on election day their pestilent hordes.
It got worse. The case went on to observe that not having more difficult voting procedures for Philadelphia, quote,
would be to place the vicious vagrant, the wandering Arabs, the Tatar hordes of our large cities on a level with the virtuous and good man.
And where you see virtuous and good man, you may by extension note it, just sort of shoehorn. See, we still got the shoehorns from last night. Just shoehorn the word white in there, okay?
Place the vicious vagrant, the wandering Arabs, the Tatar hordes of our large cities on a level with the virtuous and good white man.
That's 1869.
No, really. That's 1869.
But yet, it's also because it was favorably cited in upholding a voter suppression law in Pennsylvania. It's 2012. The rogues and strumpets have been, that language has been reaffirmed in the 21st century after America's been to the moon and stuff. Hoo-wee!
The vicious vagrant. Some
law clerk or something in 1899.
Hey, Your Eminence, can I call them vicious vagrants? Oh, do please. I shall be overjoyed to read that from the bench. Tatar hordes. Probably been reading Taras Bulba or some such. Wandering Arabs.
Really? Wandering Arabs? Well, I guess we're just lucky you didn't say wandering Jews. That's the rationale that will be cited to the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania in fairly short order as a reason for keeping American citizens from voting in the year 2012.
Tata hordes. No, I didn't say Tata, you people. Wandering Arabs.
Well, good God, if they're wandering, what are the odds they're going to find their way into a polling place? They're wandering!
Sailors' boarding houses. Oh, those sailors, thinking they can vote in America. And we do not want any pernicious sex workers voting either. Next thing you know, they'll be thinking they're citizens or some such. Or perhaps carried away by the Tatar hordes or the wandering Arabs.
Tell me about the wandering Arabs, Mitt. Oh, tell me. Tell me about the wandering... Yeah.
Ah, there's going to be lots of wandering Arabs, Bob.
Really? And rabbits? God. I want to know the lawyer that's going to...
May it please the court, we believe this case should we believe the decision of the court below should be upheld because its citation of Patterson versus Barlow is on rock solid ground, Your Honor. Wandering hordes. Because, you know, Your Honor, it's 2012 and we still have wandering hordes of Tartar hordes and wandering Arabs. And, oh, Lord, now we got Mexicans, too. And, of course, in 1869, those other dark-skinned people couldn't vote. And now they think they should be allowed to, too. And, well, by God, they need a photo ID. I mean, fine, this is America. If you want to be a wandering Arab, be a wandering Arab. But be a wandering Arab with a photo ID.
Now, meanwhile, this is the interesting part. At the trial of this matter in the trial court level, the state of Pennsylvania, are they a commonwealth? Somebody help me. Can't keep my commonwealths together. I know Kentucky is and Massachusetts is. Oh, Jeeves. Virginia's no. Yeah, I don't know. Must have put that on a brain cell that I killed one night.
But officials of Pennsylvania were compelled to admit during the trial that they could not point to not one, no, not even one case of voter fraud in which a person tried to vote improperly in the entire state, nor were they also admitted that nor were there any investigations underway. But still, the trial court was concerned about those Tartar hordes and wandering Arabs.
Oh, my aching back.
But you have to understand, these things don't exist in a vacuum. This is a mindset that exists not in a vacuum. Okay, maybe it does exist in a vacuum because it exists in that space that would be occupied by a mind if right-wingers had them. But it is a vacuum. And nature and I abhor that vacuum. Exhibit 1, Representative Steve King of Iowa.
Oh, dear.
Steve King is being challenged in November by a Democrat by the name of Christy Vilsack. He even participated in a radio debate with her, at which point she brought up, what a punk ass Steve King is. In the radio debate, Ms. Vilsack said, frankly, he, meaning Steve King, he's been a bully, and he's an embarrassment to the people of Iowa. Yes, he is, ma'am. Yes, he is. We've only been saying this for a few years now. What's the matter with you people? He's an embarrassment to the people of Iowa when he talks about immigrants as animals. If my mother were here, she would say to Congressman King, show some decency.
That's the part, ma'am, where you say, if my mama was here, she'd slap some sense into him. Yeah, because she might. But as is always the case, Steve King never apologizes because, well, I-O-K-I-Y-A-R, it's okay if you're a Republican. Steve King instead doubled down. Having been criticized in May for his comments in which he compared immigrants to this country to dogs, and I'm a dog guy, I love dogs, but I recognize that there's a big difference between human beings and dogs, and it's generally a pejorative thing to compare human beings to dogs. Steve King responded, "This American vigor that we have that comes from legal immigrants who came to this country with a dream, we get the cream of the crop of every donor civilization on the planet. And people that can take a compliment and turn it into an insult are not going to be constructive working across the aisle." But that's what that was. It was a compliment. And everyone who was there and heard that knows that. Yeah, right. Because he compared immigrants to dogs. He really did. The original quote was, "You get the pick of the litter, and you got yourself a pretty good bird dog." Well, we've got the pick of every donor civilization on the planet. Steve not know his history real good. Many of the people who came here were not the cream of the crop. The landed gentry and the well-heeled and the well-to-do and the socially secure and the comfortably well-off did not leave Europe. Did not leave China or Japan. The desperate did. You know, that's why that poem, that Emma Lazarus poem that's inscribed, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free." See, the 1% has always been 1%. They generally have not fallen into the huddled masses category. No, we did not get the cream of the crop. What we did instead is prove that that kind of the eugenic horse crap is exactly that. It's specious. It's bull. It's baloney. America has proven, at its best times, America has proven that hard work and dedication and determination will outdo one's blood and breeding 9 times out of 10. Right? But, you know, what do you want from a Republican? But it's 2012, and there's Steve King comparing people to dogs. And he'd be perfectly comfortable in an 1869 in which one worried about Tartar hordes and wandering Arabs. Right? It beggars belief. Back to the mailbox real quick. Ron and Raleigh writing in, "Hey, Bob, I keep telling you, Bob, it's feeling a lot more like 1912 than 2012. Tartars in Philly? Must have come up for the cheesesteaks. On the whole, I'd rather be in Philadelphia. You know, my old granddaddy once said to me, before they swung the trap, boy, you can't cheat an honest man. Never give a sucker an even break. And don't smarten up a chump." You know William Charles Duncan Fields was from Philadelphia, right? Yeah. Ron, with all due respect, I it feels more like 10-12 to me. Because 1912, we'd had Teddy Roosevelt, a little bit of the avarice of the 1%. A tiny little bit. Had at least been checked in 1912. The Kate out on the front range. "Oh, stop it! Too funny. Wandering whore and strumpets. That was my jazz band back in the day. We used chainsaws and pink Glocks when we raided those houses of ill repute because the landed gentry wouldn't let us vote. Looks like they didn't learn the first time." Marty, comparing people to dogs with Steve King looking in a mirror and hoping? Well, it would be a step up for Steve King. Because I think if you were to chart his genome, his nearest animal relative is probably, oh, I don't know, the skunk, the weasel. Michael noting, so when's James O'Keefe going to be charged with being a strumpet? No, I think he'd be a poltroon. Jim, I went to Philadelphia once and it was closed. Oh, God, is it going to be one of those kind of nights? Really? Is that where we're going? Okay, there we go. Thank you, Mark. Thank you for the history lesson there, or the geography lesson. Commonwealths versus states. Maybe we can get this fixed in my tiny mind once and for all. Officially, Pennsylvania, Kentucky, Virginia, and Massachusetts are all commonwealths. Okay. I'll try to remember that. Thank you, Mark. And then this, and it kind of has to do with why we began the program the way we did. Dr. John writing in under the subject line, September 11th. I managed to avoid most of what I'm sure was a stream of utterly terrible look-back stories on the TV today. Understand me, that day marked my life. September 11th, 2001. And there was incredible suffering and loss. But we can't seem to move past the empty appeals for prayers and look at the real consequences of that day, the ones that changed us as a people for the worse. One exception to my 9/11 blackout. While waiting for coffee in my university student center, I saw, of all people, Pat Robertson on the TV. About four undergrads had apparently tuned to his network and were, dare I say, enraptured. It was the usual stuff, war on terror, radical Islam, turn to Jesus, etc. This was really the last place I expected to run across old Pat and his religious claptrap. Really a bit shocking. I thought about going up and personally inviting them to enroll in my evolution course next semester, but the feeling passed. Yes, yes, you're going to have to wait till tenure attaches before you go proselytizing, Dr. John. And speaking of religious claptrap, John asks, you realize today's also the anniversary of the Mountain Meadows Massacre? Yes, John, as a matter of fact, I did. 1857, you know. It was a Friday. I looked it up. I'm that nerdy. September 11th, 1857 was a Friday. A wagon train of settlers crossing the American West was going through southern Utah on the way to California. They had started out in Arkansas, and along the way they had picked up some additional folks in Missouri. For about a week, they had been periodically harassed by white folk, Mormons, dressed up as Indians, because they wanted to blame the Indians, and well, it'd be kind of a double whammy, because you could maybe get the federal government to come in or give the Mormons the license to just kill off the Indians, and you'd take care of those troublesome, because they had set up this sick, disgusting theocracy in Utah. You know, husbands with multiple wives, and And so this party, this wagon train, was traversing through southern Utah. They were well provisioned for their day. And on the morning of September the 11th, 1857, they were set upon, well, no, that's not fair. They had been set upon in previous days, but they were down to almost no ammunition. Their animals were starving and dying of thirst. And some kindly, and this is what makes the Mountain Meadows Massacre so utterly disgusting.
some Mormons came up and said, here, let us help you. Come on out, it'll be okay. And they separated the women and the children from the men, and on a word, the Mormons turned around and slaughtered almost everyone. Something like 17 children deemed not to be old enough to remember the perfidy of that day were then kidnapped and raised as little Mormons. Somewhere between 120 and 140 innocent human beings who had done no harm whatsoever to the Mormons were slaughtered in cold blood. With the rise of with the coming Civil War, a proper investigation was almost impossible to carry out. It was picked back up after the Civil War. Brigham Young had been preaching fire and brimstone in the weeks leading up to it. He had created the atmosphere of hate and hostility that led to the murders. It wasn't a massacre. It was a murder. It was a mass murder. Killing one person is hard. Killing 120 is a real chore. After it was all over, Brigham Young, for whom a very large university is named, declared that the settlers on their way to California had been killed not by bloodthirsty Mormons, but by God, as a matter of God's retribution. And now, a member of that religion wants to be the president of the United States. Ew. Just saying. Be interesting to say, Bishop Romney, will you stand here in front of the American people and condemn Brigham Young for saying and say that he was not a prophet and that there was nothing holy about him insofar as he said that the people massacred in the Mountain Meadows massacre had it coming because God was angry at them? Can you condemn him? If not, go home, you freak. Because you know what? Willard Romney would not condemn Brigham Young. Because Brigham Young is still revered as a holy man, a prophet of that bunch of 19th century Scientologists. Yeah, it's the anniversary of the Mountain Meadows Massacre. It's the anniversary of a lot of stuff. Oh, let's see. Oh, well, let me answer your question, Jim. Retribution for what? For being mean to Mormons. Because, you see, it had been announced that the American military was coming out to set up an outpost on the Great Salt Lake, and Brigham Young, who was a paranoid, raving, homicidal maniac, had whipped up the Mormons out there. The people are coming from... Because, see, they didn't consider themselves to be Americans. They were separatists. It really was a theocracy. And Brigham Young told them that the United States government was invading. Not kidding. But, yeah, September 11th is a troublesome date. I went and looked up a few things. Let's try some on for size. I went all the way back to the beginning of the first millennium of the current era. It was on this day, in the year 9, that an event happened that, when news reached Rome a few days later, would have Caesar Augustus, formerly known as Octavian, pounding his fists and banging his head against the walls of his palace in Rome, screaming, "Ware! Legionem rede! Warus, give me back my legions." Because on this day, in the Teutoburg Forest, to the east of the Rhine, a brutal governor slash general of the Roman legions, Varus, V-A-R-U-S, you don't pronounce the V as a V, you pronounce it as a W in Latin, got some 20,000 Roman soldiers massacred in the dark and terrifying confines of the Teutoburg Forest. It was a day that Rome did not soon forget. One might argue that they remembered the Teutoburg Forest longer than this country will remember September the 11th, 2001. Because that day marked the end of any real hopes that the Roman Empire had of crossing the Rhine and establishing some sort of dominance east of the Rhine, such as they had established in Gaul. It took a Caesar to take Gaul, and they were fresh out. They just had brutal thugs like Varus. By the end of the 19th century, Arminius, who led the uprising, would have his name recast as Hermann, and a statue would be raised to him in the Teutoburg Forest at the... it's called the Hermannschlacht. And it would become a symbol of German nationalism. We went to visit it while I was there. And lo and behold, there were some drunk Nazis just hanging out with their little 88 t-shirts on. I think I told the story during the three-hour filibobster upon my return. Really wished I had my Nazi stomping boots on that day, but I figured I'd probably gotten into enough trouble as it was, getting mugged and everything. But the Latin language stopped in the Teutoburg Forest. Köln, Cologne, which started out in Latin as colonia, colony, would be about as good as it got in Germany. And that for probably not another 100 years or so. September 11th, 9 of the current era. Then there's September 11th, 1297. And a little bit of nowhere in Scotland. Just a bridge over a little nothing stream. Stirling Bridge. A bunch of drunken Scotsmen led by Mel Gibson, William Wallace, attacked a group of English auxiliaries and routed them because the English were otherwise engaged elsewhere. That worked out well for the Scots, not. Yeah, all kinds of crappy things happened on September 11th. September 11th, 1973, the overthrow of Salvador Allende in Chile. September 11th, 1773, Benjamin Franklin wrote something rather trenchant. He said there never was, on September 11th, 1773, he said, there never was a good war or a bad peace?
Sissy, pacifist, liberal.
And then, of course, September 11th, 1857. And on up. To this day. Not the best of days. September 11th. So, there is more than what happened in 2001 to be aware of. And frankly, you know, I told you last week about the passing of our dear friend Maura. Her funeral service. She was cremated. Her funeral service was this past weekend. And although it took 11 years to effect the ultimate outcome, she was a victim of September the 11th, as were so many who breathed that filth, that dust, that bronchi-clogging, lung-killing dust. And so I had more than enough to think about today by way of marking that day. It was always Maura who would write me and say, "Hey, Bob, podcast hasn't gone up yet." Because if she wasn't able to listen live, which she frequently did, she was always chomping at the bit to hear what y'all had to say in the podcast. And she'd say things like, "Hate to be a pest, but..." And I would always write back, "Maura, you're not being a pest. I appreciate you telling me. I need to know these things." So, yes. We have a loss in our own Horn family here to remind us of the horrors of that beautiful, what started out to be a beautiful day, September the 11th, 2001. Indeed. It is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. And, of course, all of this will play into our conversation, I suppose, as well as whatever else you want to bring to the program. You do that by either emailing Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid at gmail.com, or you can call in, or you can go and participate in the chat room. You can do it just about any way you see fit. Oh, by the way, a little piece of fascinating trivia. Jim noting, Goering used to write letters to editors prior to Adolf Hitler's rise to power, signed Arminius. Yeah, they glommed right onto him. Think about that. A battle that concluded on September the 11th, 9... wound up being one of the motivating images for a group of monsters who would slaughter people in their millions. For want of a nail, and you know how the rest of it goes. So the lines are open. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. And, let's see, I don't have Skype fired up yet. I'll see about doing that during the break. Bob Kincaid Horn is the Skype contact. And, of course, the email address, as noted. This is Conversation Radio. This is the horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, September 11, 2012.
President Obama promised to begin to slow the rise of the oceans.
More droughts and floods and wildfires are not a joke. They are a threat to our children's future.
A tale of two conventions, wrapping up the RNC and the DNC.
That long of a stretch of months has not happened in our period of record.
It's official, 2012 shaping up to be the hottest year on record. Shell finally begins drilling in the Arctic, but the Arctic has other ideas, plus 9/11 and the consequences of ignoring warnings.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Climate change is not a hoax.
Oh, great. Now you tell us. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, with the two conventions finally wrapped, there was a stark difference between the two of them when it came to climate change, global warming, and energy policy.
Oh, yeah, it was poles apart, but we'll get to that in a moment. First, another setback for Shell Oil's troubled billion-dollar Arctic adventure. After receiving administration approval on Friday, Royal Dutch Shell began exploratory drilling in the Chukchi Sea, 70 miles off the coast of Alaska, on Sunday. But apparently, the Arctic had other plans. Almost immediately, Shell had to halt operations due to massive ice floes closing in on the rig. One as big as 30 miles long.
Amazing. You mean they started drilling and then immediately had to stop drilling?
Yep, the very next day.
Is this the same Arctic drilling that the U.S. Coast Guard had been warning about, saying that if there's a problem, if there's an oil spill, we simply don't have the resources to clean it up?
Yes, and that is why Shell is only allowed to drill pilot holes right now and is not allowed to tap into any oil reservoirs because their oil spill response ship is still in Seattle awaiting certification.
And yet they've been given a license to drill anyway?
Just the pilot holes, though.
Oh, brother.
And by the way, since Arctic sea ice has melted to a record low this year because of global warming, Shell is asking for a 3-week extension to their permit.
Because there's more time to drill.
Yeah.
There's also more free ice floating around, is there not?
Yes, there's that, too. It's official. The first 8 months of 2012, from January to August, were the hottest on record in the continental United States since record-keeping began in 1895.
No kidding.
That's according to scientists at the National Climate Data Center. While record heat waves and drought made this July the hottest single month ever on record in the U.S., the whole summer, the stretch of June, July, and August, was only the third hottest summer on record in the U.S.
You're saying that July was the hottest month ever recorded in the history of the United States.
Yes.
Amazing.
More importantly, though, each of the last 15 months has been above average for temperature, and that is an unprecedented record, says NOAA scientist Jake Crouch.
That long of a stretch of months has not happened in our period of record of having temperatures this warm for that long of a period.
Consistently higher temperatures are in line with climate scientists' predictions of global warming caused by humans' greenhouse gas emissions.
And yet, Rush Limbaugh, after the Democratic convention, had this to say about it all.
And by the way, Obama, last night, he was talking to me last night. And climate change is not a hoax. Yes, it is, just as you are.
Yeah, well, it looks like climate change may very well become an issue, an actual issue, in the 2012 presidential campaign. In an interview on Sunday's Meet the Press, GOP presidential candidate Mitt Romney again minimized and dismissed the threat of climate change.
I'm not in this race to slow the rise of the oceans or to heal the planet. I'm in this race to help the American people.
And, of course, slowing the rise of the oceans or healing the planet would be of no help to the American people whatsoever.
Now, President Obama, on the other hand, after years of not mentioning it, focused prominently on climate change in his speech to the Democratic National Convention last week.
And, yes, my plan will continue to reduce the carbon pollution that is heating our planet because climate change is not a hoax. More droughts and floods and wildfires are not a joke. They are a threat to our children's future, and in this election, you can do something about it.
Now, again, the candidates are poles apart in clean energy policy. Romney is against federal support for clean energy and has called on Congress to kill off the crucial wind energy production tax credit that expires at the end of this year. Romney's also for keeping billions in permanent annual taxpayer subsidies for big oil. President Obama, on the other hand, called for ending big oil subsidies and expanding federal investment in America's homegrown renewable energy industries. But we should also point out Obama touted the myth of clean coal.
Speaking of hoaxes.
Finally, as the nation commemorates the September 11th terrorist attacks this week, new revelations in the New York Times show that the Bush administration ignored and dismissed even more dire warnings than was previously known. And that provides a stark reminder, says Peter Sinclair of ClimateCrocs.com, that the same people who ignored and ridiculed warnings from terrorism experts prior to 9/11 are the same people who are ignoring and ridiculing climate experts' warnings on the dangers of climate change today.
Very smart point. For more on that story and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via iTunes. You can listen to us on your mobile device via Stitcher Radio. Follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. And please find and like the Green News Report on the Facebook. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
The more you ignore me, the closer I get. You're wasting your time. The more you ignore me, the closer I get.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Thank you, B-Rez. That's our buddy, B-Rez. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. Hour number two of this Titanic Tuesday. Program note, no shows tomorrow, Thursday, or Friday. Going to try to make sure that there's a show on Monday, unless it turns out that I'm traveling back from D.C. There's a great likelihood that, in fact, if there is a show on Monday, it'll be because I'm in D.C., I'm going to Wisconsin on Friday. Anybody who wants to come by and say howdy at the Fightin' Bob Fest is more than welcome. I love to meet folks and put faces with voices and names. And yeah, Fightin' Bob Fest in Madison, Wisconsin on Saturday. Y'all come, you hear? I don't think they say that up there, but they may hear it for the first time. Y'all come. Hillbilly and Badgerland. That'd be me. A couple of things. Email coming in from Irish Dave pointing out that apparently a Clint Eastwood classic is going to be remade as a children's movie. It's going to be called Hang 'em High Chair. Irish Dave will not be here all week because there will be no shows Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. But nonetheless, try the veal and don't forget to tip your waiter. Kate wrote in and she said, that was just beautiful, talking about the song we played going into the break. Was that really Lee Marvin? Yes, yes it was. From the classic late 60s musical, maybe early 70s, no, I think it's late 60s, Paint Your Wagon. That's probably one of the few songs that I could actually croak my way through on something resembling key. Kate said, I feel as if I have a new anthem. I never thought of being tied to a tree in heaven to keep me from wandering. Gee, something to think about. The asphalt is starting to pull at me this week. That's a tremendous pull when the asphalt pulls.
But speaking of Paint Your Wagon, and Irish Dave's mention of Clint Eastwood, The Goddess of Irony is a good and, what's more important, really funny goddess. Because that soundtrack also, well, that movie, the two principal male stars were Lee Marvin and Clint Eastwood. Never thought about Lee Marvin and Clint Eastwood being Broadway musical star material, but yes, they were. And who was the lead female actor? J. Edgar Hoover hounded her to death because she had a multiracial baby. She had to leave the country and move to France. Ultimately, though, the hounding took its toll and she committed suicide. Gene Seberg. But in 2012, Clint Eastwood, of course, famously talked to an empty chair. Because the Goddess of Irony is a good goddess, back in the late 60s in Paint Your Wagon, well, you know, before you can have a chair, you have to have a tree. And back in the late 60s, Clint Eastwood sang this. I mean, if you can call it singing.
I talked to the tree, but they don't listen to me. I talked to the stars, but they never hear me. The breeze hasn't time to stop and hear what I say. I talk to them all in vain. But suddenly my words...
Yeah, that's about as much of that as anybody should have to tolerate. But yes, just a reminder, the Goddess of Irony is a good goddess and a damn fine funny one into the bargain. The soundtrack was released in 1977, but I think the movie was much earlier. Talk to the trees. Yeah, well, maybe it was a flashback. The whole movie, I don't much go in for musicals, but the whole movie is enjoyable. The hypocritical preacher, you know, the Gold Fever. Yeah, it's a fun movie. It's a fun film. See, Irish Dave gets it. Trees are merely pre-born chairs, don't you know? Exactly. That's where I was going. The phone lines are open, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. If you want to jump in, do please. Got a line on hold right now. But I want to share something with you before we do go to the phones, because I don't want this to go by. This is an email I just got a little bit ago. Came in right after the start of the show. And I want you to have a sense, because so many people listen to this program, and I never hear from. And they don't call. And they don't email. And so, the only idea we have that they're out there is that, you know, there are some random numbers showing downloads or live listeners, things like that. And so I got an email this evening from Philip. And Philip wrote and said, I've been listening to The Horn for about a year and wish I had discovered it earlier. It is so reassuring to know that there are articulate progressives throughout the country and especially in the South. I'm a federal employee who left Massachusetts for Texas in 1988. After 10 years in exile,
I relocated to the East Coast and have lived in Maryland since 1998. Frankly, when I lived in Texas, I thought the political situation was bleak. After two terms of Bill Clinton, the last successful moderate Republican president, I was dismayed when my former governor, Shrub, followed me to work in Washington after successfully staging a coup. I live in a predominantly Republican county, and we progressives speak in low tones. I guess, Philip, that's what Bishop Willard Romney would refer to as quiet rooms. We progressives speak in low tones when among other county residents rather than wage constant verbal battles against the conservative libertarians who outnumber us. I am so glad to realize that there are more folks who think like me out there than I initially thought after living 24 years in the South. I cannot say the name of the agency for which I work, but let's just say that Congress slashed our budget again, despite the fact that we collect the revenue. The Republican concern about the deficit is a specious fabrication to justify underfunding government agencies and make them increasingly dysfunctional, so the GOP can then argue for contracting out to their donors and supporters. I discovered the Horn by accident when I was searching for a progressive radio station. Sandra was on the line and speaking polemically in that wonderful mixed metaphor she uses of articulate thought and interspersed by obscenities. At first, I wondered what I was listening to and how the show was escaping the FCC's wrath. You then explained it after her call. I listened a few more nights and was hooked. To hear Jim in his laconic southern accent wax philosophically and knowledgeably about a host of subjects, Brother Albert speak his views that show why he is indeed the sage of southwest Wisconsin, Kevin from Colorado in his dedication to being an active progressive, Andy with his political fervor, idealism, and commitment, and all the other callers with whom you converse, is a joy. I often listen to the shows at least twice. Consequently, I listened to the show when Maura called twice and am convinced that she was calling to say farewell to you and the Horn. Your on-air response to her passing was poignant and moving. I had not heard her call in before and know that I missed an important voice in the conversation. Philip continues, tonight I made a small contribution and hit the donate immediately button. I also made a small donation last night, but overlooked sending it immediately. I wish I could have donated more, but I have been ill and out of work for several months. Notwithstanding my current financial situation, I persuaded my wife that there is no other show like yours on air, and we need to do what little we could to try to help keep you on the air. Thank you and your callers so much for all of the hours of enjoyment, knowledge, and insight. I signed the sign-on petition last night and forwarded it to all of my friends. In addition, I've urged them to give you a listen, and I hope they do. May Agnes and you and all the Horn family enjoy the best of health. Those are the kind of notes that make it all worth doing. You see what you mean to other people? There are countless folks out there who don't take the time to write that email, but who feel the same way. And when I say that what began with perhaps a smattering of ambition nearly 7 years ago, 10 years if you count terrestrial radio, has become an exercise in humility, I don't know of any better way of putting it. What is going on here is nothing short of the creation of community where the right wing, the Republicans, the libertarians, the Paulistas, the teabaggers, and all their other filthy ilk want us to feel nothing but isolation
malaise, and misery. And that is what makes this humbling. And that is what makes me so proud that we have persisted in this notion of conversation radio. So thank you so much for that email. That's the kind of email that Agnes has me print off and hand to her, and I don't know what she does with them. Someday, maybe. I don't know. Mention was made in the email, however, of the sign-on petition. I talked about it last night. If you have not signed on yet, go to signon.org/end-appalachias-agony. You know, before we talked about it last night, there were less than 200 signatures. Now, as we speak, there are 295 on the way to the preliminary goal of 300. When we get to 300, it'll say we need 500. We need to make this big. If you haven't signed yet, please go and do so. Because this will provide the impetus we need when it's time to reintroduce the AIC Act in January. And how awesome would it be to walk with a stack, a back-breaking stack of petition signatures, and drop it on the desk in the office of the Speaker of the House and the Minority Leader and say, quit fiddling around and stop allowing Appalachian citizens of the United States to be treated as expendable fodder for the profiteers of the coal industry. Jim sending out kudos for the previous email. Kudos to your last caller from a federal employee who used to be the problem as identified by those who want it all. God bless. Because remember, this goes back to Ronnie Reagan.
The most dangerous words you'll ever hear are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. We've got to get government off your backs and into your wombs.
Old bastard. I hope they've sunk wells in his skull in hell.
I think we hit another gusher, Daddy. You little demons, just keep drilling.
Yeah, what are they calling that up in Alaska now? You heard the story on the Green News Report. What's that call now? Drill, maybe drill? Dumbasses. Greedy, arrogant pigs. But enough. Light up the phones if you want to. We don't have any conversation for the next 3 days. If you want to participate, this would be a fine time to do it. Let's go to the phones.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
That brought tears to my eyes, that email.
Wasn't that beautiful?
It was. That was really... And, you know, I think about the song, it's a Western song. It's called Cool Water. You ever heard of that?
Oh, I think I've even played it on this show.
Well...
Sons of the Pioneers, wasn't it?
Yeah, and what it is to me is like... It's like that, the cool water. You're in a desert, and you're thirsty, and along comes somebody like Bob Kincaid and gives you a big old, good old cold drink of water.
You know, that's so charming you would use that analogy, Juanita, because way back when I was a little boy, I remember my grandmother, who was born in 1894, talking about her first day of school.
Uh-huh.
Her first day of school ever. And she went home, and my great grandfather, O Goad, Ozias Goad, what a name, huh?
G-O-A-D?
G-O-A-D. Said, "Well, Idy, how'd you like school?" And she said, "Oh, Poppy, I loved it so much. learning things was like drinking cool water.
Oh.
So do you see how these things all tie together? I mean, and I get to have it happen in my life, Juanita. Thank you so much.
Well, I used to love those Western songs like Wagon Wheels, and I was crazy about them.
Oh, yeah.
And Cool Water, that's a great song.
Yeah, see, yeah, you're resonating. Irish Dave just wrote in and said, don't trust him, Dan. He's a devil, not a man.
Right, and he's spread the burning sand with water.
Exactly.
There's water. I wanted to let you know, Sunday morning I had gotten up and I turned on the Washington Journal,
mm-hmm.
and I laid down and went to sleep. And I woke up hearing this guy talking, and he was talking about the 2 million dead people that vote and all this kind of stuff. And he got to talking about the Florida thing in 2000 and all, and I thought, this guy's lying. And anyway, I got up, and guess who it was?
Oh, no.
Booked out.
Who?
John Fund.
Oh, of course. Oh, the wife beater?
Oh, is that? Oh, I thought he was at
his
have an abortion.
Well, he did that. No, the woman beater. Well, he started out dating one woman, and then he got her daughter pregnant and compelled her to have an abortion.
Yeah.
All while being a conservative voice for conservative family values on the Wall Street Journal editorial board. And somewhere along the way decided that one of those women just needed some sense knocked into him.
He's a
class act.
Well, I'm going to tell you, when I looked at him, he could play a devil or a demon or whatever in a movie and not have to wear makeup at all. The way he looks now, you can just see his eyes are just weird, Bob.
I don't think they've ever not been weird, Juanita. I mean, he is a sick individual.
Weirder. He's weirder than he was.
Well, all I can say to that is, ooh.
Yes, right. But one guy called in and says, I forget the guy's name that's been on there a long time. Not the older guy, but the other one. Anyway, this guy called in and he said, would you tell him to be quiet to give me a chance to talk? And he just laughed, the co-host did. And John said, okay. And then when the guy got through, he said, well, now it's my turn. But he just told
all. It's like Romper Room or something, right?
Oh, it was something. But this guy he's worse than ever. And why did they let him get away with that? He's wrote all this big old book about it. And I looked up on.
Well, bear in mind, if a progressive had beaten up on a woman and gotten her daughter pregnant and then forced her to have an abortion. You reckon that person would still be a voice in the progressive universe?
No.
He would be, I don't know, exiled to planet Norbulon 12,
right,
never
right.
to be heard from again.
I had my surgery last week.
Well, that was, I was going to wait for you to raise it, but how did it go?
Well, I keep hating to say anything. I'm thinking about talking about it. But it went fine. They said I'm doing good. I got the second-hand lens. You know, people like us, we can't afford this.
You got a retread?
Well, they've got one that if you pay $2,500, you don't have to have glasses at all.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But this is the one they normally use, but they do have all this new stuff, you know. You know how that goes.
Yeah.
that they dangle.
Well, if you had enough, if you had enough money, you know, and maybe you were connected to, say Dick Cheney or something,
mm-hmm.
you could he could probably have somebody killed just to give you a whole new set of eyeballs.
Yeah.
Because God knows there's some decent human being out there in a grave now, and his heart, and that person's heart's beating inside Dick's chest.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't that just gross you out?
Yes, it does.
And what's he what's he using some decent person's heart for? Did you catch this, Juanita?
What?
He's using some decent heart, decent human being's heart to facilitate him criticizing Barack Obama. Let's see. This is what he said
last year when we delivered justice to Osama bin Laden. I made it clear that our success was due to many people and many organizations working together over many years across two administrations. That's why my first call once American forces were safely out of harm's way was to President Bush.
No, wait a minute. That was Obama. I'm reading it with the... was to President Bush, because protecting our country is neither the work of one person nor the task of one period of time. It's an ongoing obligation that we all share. Okay, so wrong voice. But no, Dick Cheney and some decent human being's heart, on the other hand, said that Barack Obama is trying to take sole credit. That's his phrase, sole credit.
Yeah, that's a big thing, you know. That...
Now, what he said... what Dick and some decent human being's heart said was, because that heart that's beating inside Dick Cheney is not Dick Cheney. That's some decent human being inside an utterly evil shell.
Yeah.
But he said,
if President Obama were participating in his intelligence briefings on a regular basis, then perhaps he would understand why people are so offended at his efforts to take sole credit for the killing of Osama bin Laden. Those who deserve the credit are the men and women in our military and intelligence communities who worked for many years to track him down. They're the ones who deserve the thanks of a grateful nation.
You know, as if Barack Obama said at some point along the way, I did it with my little hatchet,
uh-huh.
all by myself.
Yeah.
And wouldn't even let Dick and George stand up there and say, and we helped, you know, just like the Shake and Bake commercial. And we helped.
Oh, yeah, that, you just spot on, Bob.
God.
What creeps.
Well, the things that medical science can do to make completely evil people continue to live.
Ew. I'm telling you, he's really taking advantage of whatever it is. And that was his reason, huh? His reason for living, just so he can tell another lie. Those people, they don't know how to tell the truth, none of them. You just don't hear them tell the truth.
It ain't in them.
No, it's not. Okay, well, Bob, I guess I'll let
you
go.
Well, I'm so glad things worked out. I was waiting for word so that we'd know you were okay.
Yeah, they even got me a ride and everything, and that was great. Didn't have to pay for the ride.
How long did you have to, did you get both eyes done at the same time?
I got the one that is the worst one. I tell you, Bob, I don't think I could handle it right now. I get both of them done.
Yeah, but I mean...
I don't know. I've been under a lot of stress, you know.
I can imagine.
About different things. And.
Well, you know, again, some of that's by to the extent, Juanita, that some of this, some of your stress revolves around the current degree of hatred floating around in this country. That's,
oh, Lord.
You know, that's on purpose. They mean that. The right wing is putting all this filth and hatred out there as a means of filling progressive and liberal people's hearts with dismay and disgust,
yes.
And hopefully keeping us away from the polls.
Thank you. Oh, by the way, did you hear about our voting thing? That, you know, they're doing everything down here to keep people away. Did you hear the latest about down here? We're going to have places are going to have at least 10 pages on both sides ballots.
10 pages?
At least. Some places, it's just according to what county. And anyway, yeah, I heard about it yesterday.
Wow.
And it's connected, you know, to all that other stuff that they're trying to get to, down here.
Tell me something. Where is Leon County, Juanita?
That's Tallahassee, I believe.
That's what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I read a story about the Leon County Sheriff today.
Oh, what?
He's saying that he wants to take target practice at his opponents in the sheriff's race.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they call that South Alabama.
Is that Lower Alabama? I thought it was South Georgia.
No, they call that South Alabama. One of the newspapers down here, Tampa Tribune.
Oh, Lower Alabama.
They dubbed it South Alabama.
Now, see, I always grew up calling that whole White Sand Panhandle area. I always grew up calling that the Redneck Riviera or L.A. for Lower Alabama.
Well, either way, but that's what I heard. I thought that was pretty good, you know, pretty good application.
Well, unless you live in Leon County, in which case it's probably not meant as a compliment.
Well, that's where, you know, Morning Joe's from.
I thought he was from Panama City.
Well, I mean,
up around Cossack's, you know, neck of the woods.
Yeah, that's part of it. That's part of South Alabama.
Okay.
I don't mean this.
And then, of course, our dear friend, for whom we have much love, Peter Godbold, is from somewhere outside Tallahassee.
How's he doing? Is he okay?
I hear from Peter every now and then. He's just percolating along and doing, you know, coping as best he can. I mean, you know, he lives there. And it's kind of like us, you know.
Very stressful job.
You mean living there?
Well, besides that, I think, you know, working on computers is not.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, no. There
it's
was,
not easy like a lot of people think. It's an easy job. It's not.
Oh, no, no, no. No. Bless his heart. He was so patient with me teaching me stuff.
That's like that old song, Cigarettes and Whiskey and Wild Women. They'll drive you crazy. They'll drive you insane. Remember that one?
Now, that one escapes me. I'm going to have to look it up.
Yeah.
All right. Well, by the way, there's a little something on the way for you here. Ron and Raleigh wrote in and said, Juanita asked for it, and Juanita should get what she wants. Love her to death. So coming up when we're done with our call.
Cool water?
You betcha.
Oh, thank you.
Juanita, you have a wonderful evening.
You too.
Bye now. Bye-bye. Yeah, that's Juanita, our correspondent from Central Florida. And yeah, this just makes sense. You can't reference a song like this and leave it hanging out there. You just got to play it.
All day I faced a barren waste without the taste of water. Water. Old Dan and I, with throats burned dry and souls that cry for water.
Water.
Cool.
Water.
Clear.
Water.
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 Keep on moving, Dan. Don't you listen to him, Dan. He's the devil, not a man. And he spread the burning sand with water. Dan, can you see that big green tree where the water's running free and it's waiting there for me and you?
Clear water.
The nights are cool and I'm a fool. Each star's a pool of water.
Cool water.
But with the dawn I'll wake and yawn and care. Moving, Dan, don't you listen to him, Dan. He's the devil, not a man. And he spread the burning sand with water. Dan, can you see that big green tree where the water's running free and it's waiting there for me and you?
Clear
The shadows sway and seem to say, tonight we pray for water, cool water. And way up there he'll hear our prayer and show us where there's water, cool water, clear water. Keep a moving and don't you listen to him, Dan. He's the devil, not a man, and he spread the burning sand with water. Then can you see that big green tree where the water's running free and it's waiting there for me and you? Dan's feet are sore, he's yearning for just one thing more than water. Cool water. Like me, I guess he'd like to rest where there's no quest for water.
Sons of the Pioneers, Cool Water, just for Juanita, and thank you, Ron and Raleigh. By the way, before we go back to the phones, a note coming in from Dr. John, subject line to the previous emailer. So glad you found the show. Keep the emails coming, and you're welcome to call. Indeed, indeed, you are. Or just email. Or however you like it best. That's how it works here. Let's keep things going. Lines are open, by the way. You know the number. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, this is Grant from Portland.
Well, hey, Grant. How you doing?
The other Portland.
The yes.
As Maine has, Maine Coyote has reminded me.
You're right, right. The other Portland. You know, there's a couple of other Portlands out there.
I heard.
There's one just across the line from Kentucky into Tennessee.
Strange. Interesting. Hey, you know, you got me thinking, you know, when you talked about the massacre in Utah sometime back?
Mm-hmm. September 11th, 1857, yes.
Yeah, you kind of kicked up some memories of the explanation I heard. And it really started making me think a little bit about the cycles of persecution that went on in those times. The way it came to me as a whole picture was, you know, way back before that event and what you got for your trouble. I mean, whatever you think of Joseph Smith or Huckster or this, that, flim flam, whatever. There were a lot of people that just true-heartedly went into this and bought it and got on it and did their First Amendment thing and everything else. The problem I always had was, what happened as a reaction to that from the other competing faiths? I mean, burning your barn, exhorted on, you know, I mean, just egged on by the same kind of thing we see out of the, you know, Dominionists and Reconstructionists.
Well, one of the things that presaged or went before the Mountain Meadows Massacre, one of the reasons that this particular wagon train was attacked was because one of the women that one of the polygamists had enticed away from her husband was a man from Arkansas. And out of the psychology was, guilt, fear, paranoia, what have you, it quickly raced through the Mormon communities out in Utah that in that wagon train was someone who was associated with some sort of vendetta against the polygamist who stole the wife.
I heard it a different way.
And then that there was also somebody from Missouri who said he had the rifle gun that was used to gut shoot old Joe Smith. That was the quote.
Well, I'm sure a lot of that kind of stuff kicked up around camp, but I mean, the way I heard it was, whether it was the stories, confusion or something, what I heard it was, is way back before this, the barn burning, you know, the shooting of the husband, the, you know, all this kind of stuff. I mean, you have to understand something. Within Mormonism, burns brightly in the brain, okay, a memory of the persecutions and pogroms that were going on from the other competing quote-unquote Christian faith against them. And so you go way down the road into that time, it wouldn't have taken anything but a rumor, okay. The thing I caught was there was definitely a question of mistaken identity going on here. I think the wrong people, blah, 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 were revenged upon by the injured parties. But you have to understand that deep in their brains is what they just came from. You know, you get shot for your religion. You get your barn burned for your religion. All this kind of stuff. Not to apologize for the act. Okay. Go down the road then. I'm looking at a cycle here and a pattern. All it took was just a rumor. And innocent people get slaughtered. The bigger thing is, I mean, even though the Mormon Church and the other faiths have many years since come to a forgiveness point between each other for the various back and forth things that happen, still in the mind you'll find, you know, this persecution thing. And I think that has a lot to do with what happened there. I mean, they had it straight in their brain, fresh from their experiences, and they just went after the wrong people. But,
you know, what
I'm learning about this kind of thing is the biggest problem with this is once this pogrom cycle gets going, wherever it starts, it always seems to be indirectly deflected against somebody else who's innocent, was not the problem. You know what I'm saying?
I do, you know, there are a few problems. I mean, I understand the nature of what you're asserting, Grant, but there are a few problems that go with it. First of all, if they were just hopping mad and it was a case of mistaken identity, they would have, I would think, just gone out and attacked him. Now, the attacks did go on for several days to the point that, reference the song we just played, Cool Water. They had no, the wagon train had no water and no forage for their animals that they were driving with them. Edicts had been issued in the Mormon theocracy and it just, I mean, that's really what it was. And I'm not being pejorative here. The Utah Territory was a Mormon theocracy, and an edict had gone out that Mormons were not to sell, feed, or provide water to settlers crossing through Utah. And, of course, there was the hysteria that Brigham Young brought on by screaming that the Federals were coming to... And he, you know what he referred to them as? The Americans are coming. In other words, they no longer considered themselves to be Americans. Whatever they were, American was not what it was. They were setting up their, they had their theocracy. This is 1857. The murder of Joseph Smith happened in, what, 1833? Not much after that. And then after the fact, Brigham Young began dancing, so to speak, and basically said that the settlers who were attacked had it coming because it was God's judgment upon them. And those, and you know, those are all documentable and verifiable.
Right. Well, upon the, you know, the decree they just gave, the fatwa, I say fucking bullshit. But
and at one point in time, there's another document out there that's quite fascinating. Harry provided it to me a week or so ago, and it has to do with it has to do with Joseph Smith himself, and I had never seen anyone mention this outside of me, namely that there are elements of Mormonism that smack of, you know, Islam. But lo and behold, Harry sent this along, and I found it quite fascinating. Joseph Smith once declared that he wanted to create Islam. He wanted to create a sort of American Islam, and that he wanted to be like Muhammad in America.
Bob, I think what you're looking at there is sort of the element of the Masonic infusion within that faith, I gotta say, because they have a lot of Middle Eastern elements within that. Now, I gotta tell you something. I mean, what I'm really saying here is, what you've got in this country is a series of pogroms, religious, could be skin color, could be I want your damn land, could be a lot of things. But in the explanation of that massacre, I think you need to do the background on it and say, look what the Mormons went through, Bob, for exercising their First Amendment rights to choose a religion. The people got fucking shot all the time. Their houses got burned all the time. They got driven from their lands all the time, until the point where they just moved out west and said, screw y'all. You don't want us? We don't want you. We're out. What would you do? You see what I'm talking about?
I do, and there...
But then, now, here's the thing. I'm not apologizing for the massacre. That's a black stain forever. But that's what is going to be in your mind. To put a push card all the way across the goddamn Rockies.
Well, and I think it probably goes into some of the other more paranoid manifestations of what they do. For instance, the White Horse Prophecy.
What's all this?
The White Horse Prophecy is a Mormon prophecy that says that there will come a time when the Constitution hangs by a thread, and a Mormon on a white horse will come and save the nation. And,
I'm familiar with this, but not quite read like that. It's a time of, I take it as an archetypal narrative of steep decline, deep corruption, a cyclical thing.
Well, there's a bunch of them out there now who think that Bishop Willard Romney is the white horse.
Oh, I got it. Trust me, I saw the parallel coming a mile off, you know, when they started putting him up there. But I'm telling you, Bob, he's a pulse candidate. They ain't serious about him. This is the thing. I've seen a trend, partially what this is about. I've seen a trend with Peter B. Collins, you, Mike Malloy. Here's the thing. You want to hate Mitt Romney? Go for it. He's a goddamn economic vampire. Okay? He's a shyster Ken doll narcissist. What he's doing with Mormon on his name, I have no clue. Okay? Because he don't act what I was taught, okay, from the pulpit at all in my past. He don't do it, okay? You don't put people on the street. You don't put people out of business. You don't put them into poverty. But I'll tell you this. You want to hate Mitt Romney? Go for it. He's earned it. But what I don't appreciate is projections on the isms. This smacks of the language of pogrom, and we live in a time of stochastic targeting. And I'm worried about the innocent of every faith. This is kind of where this goes. You dig?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I do, and it is. I freely admit that it's troublesome. But the fact of the matter is, I was raised in the Christian church. Okay, it doesn't matter that I was raised. You know, I was raised as a Southern Baptist, and Southern Baptists will argue with you until hell freezes over that we are not Protestants.
Yeah.
That we are the true...
Still dance on the head of a pin.
That we are the true faith.
Oh, please.
Okay, that the Baptist faith was not a function of protest against Rome. It is, of course, hooey. But as someone who was raised Christian, I acknowledge... And it's part of the reason that I want nothing to do with Christianity. I mean nothing. I mean, as in, unless I'm doing some sort of honor to someone, a funeral or a wedding, I will not darken the doorway of a church unless it's something that would do a dishonor to someone I care about, a funeral, a wedding, something like that. I will not darken the doorway of a church.
You know, Bob,
and having said that, the reason I say that is because I know the history of the faith, and I know what a bunch of hocus pocus baloney grounds it. I know about the Council of Nicaea. I know that Constantine, for instance, didn't give a damn whether Arianism or non-Arianism won out as long as somebody did and he could consolidate power. And that is in the primary source documents of the history of the faith. After power was consolidated, though, I mean, Jesus, Constantine is hailed as the man who made Christianity the state religion of Rome. Not really. And he waited until his deathbed to be baptized. You know, just looking for a loophole, I guess, as W.C. Fields would say.
The caveat proviso and disclaimer.
Right, exactly. But I know how drenched in blood and how much unmitigated bullshit surrounds the message of Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, and thus I want nothing to do with Christianity. I want nothing to do with Islam, because it too is soaked in human innocent blood. I want nothing to do with Hinduism, because it too is soaked in innocent human blood. There is no religion that I, and frankly, you know, I apply the same thing to Mormonism. And I don't know how a person of good conscience can be a part of anybody that is so soaked in blood and death and agony and misery in the name of an allegedly loving God.
And therein lies the insidious test of intelligence in our mortality, as I see it. I'll put it to you this way, Bob. I think we're on the same page with respect to church buildings and for-profit religions and all the rest of it. I feel more comfortable in a deciduous coastal rainforest.
A lot more likely to find God there, that's for sure.
Than I do on the steps of a church. Because I'll tell you something, when I go out into the forest and I totally take in the moment, I am in the presence of manifest intelligence all around me. It saturates me, it saturates my mind, it saturates every living creature around me. And it shows me things that no church pulpit could ever teach me. It is a simple expression of intelligence itself. So I think we're somewhere near the same page.
I think we probably are.
But I'll tell you something. With respect to the snowball fights of the centuries, okay? The thing that really stands out in all of these things, and particularly where the Mormons are concerned, both to receive the persecution and to vet it out, you know, to met it out against the innocent in turn, the thing I see here is so endemic, so crushed into the essence of Islam, even Judaism in some ways, and definitely in Christianity. Is this sort of abusive dynamic. It's like there's an insidious, like, under the carpet, under the floorboards, seed of abuse that goes on there. And it's this thing that just kind of oozes up every so often, and someone's husband gets shot, or someone's baby gets killed, or beaten to death because they just weren't chaste enough, or some shit, you know, some shit comes out of the brain. But if you trace back every single one of these things, it's like this cycle of abuse that is just so saturated into the background. And I think it's that kind of, I mean, let's name the demon.
Sure, I have some.
That is the one.
We can talk about past practices, okay? I found it. I finally found what I was looking for. Joseph Smith announced that he wanted to be known as the Prophet Muhammad of North America with the fearsome slogan, either Al-Quran or the sword. And, you know, he and his followers did make war on their fellow citizens. And they also threatened war against the United States. There's a story out there. I mean, of course, everybody knows about the golden plates that he found. There's real documented primary source document material history out there that is actively suppressed by the church in the Mormon Church in the 21st century. For instance, when he went to marry his first wife, her father said to him, "Son," because he was a young man at the time, and he'd already been arrested a couple of times for this hustle that he had going, of going to farmers and telling them that he would find buried ancient treasure on their land, but they had to pay him first. It was a con, and he was busted for it in the state of New York. The records still exist. The Mormon Church says, "Well, we don't think so. That was done to discredit us." You know, that whole paranoid thing. But no, they're really real, and they're really there. And so his prospective father-in-law said, "Son, why don't you settle down? You know, I'll give you some land here. You can be an honest farmer." And in front of a witness, he said, I will give up the practice of using the peering glass," I think was the 19th century term. But then he didn't. This notion that there is some degree of something that happened in the past, but that's all behind us now, and we'll work through it, and it's part of our legacy, and we got to get over it. That's all well and good. Okay, we'll do that. Then I need someone to explain to me why poor Anne Frank has been baptized a dozen damn times by the Mormon Church when they've been told repeatedly, "Don't do it." I need someone to explain to me why, at the same time, or approximately, they baptized Adolf Hitler. Now, let's just imagine heaven for what they say it is. Do you really want to be Anne Frank walking down the streets of gold one day, and there stands this guy with a Charlie Chaplin mustache who was responsible for your murder on Earth, and you're going to share paradise with him? Within the Mormon theology, hell, you may have been sealed to him, and you may be his wife.
Well, don't that paint a picture? Well,
come here, Annie, up with the skirts. Uncle Adolf wants a little.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing I got to say about that one. Man, I don't know about all that because let me take it back a step. At the fundamentals of the doctrine, as I was ever taught, okay, is the notion of free agency. And if you refuse something for, you know, whatever reason, it's your choice. Nobody has the right to just go ahead and just bulldoze or, you know, right over the top of your choice. That's your franchise as an intelligence, you see, to choose. To use your intelligence and to choose. So I don't even know why some people are doing this stuff. You know, that's just
The same token, Grant, there is a hierarchy that can make them stop. I mean, no one will argue that the Mormon Church is some sort of consensus based kumbaya fest. It is a rigorous, rigid, top down authoritarian structure. You know, among other things, when he was running for governor and Senate in Massachusetts, a woman asked Willard Romney about his stance on abortion, and he said, "I talked to the folks in St. Louis, I talked to the folks in Salt Lake, and they said it was okay if I was pro-choice in a liberal state like Massachusetts."
Yeah, I got the picture.
So we're talking about a top-down structure that, if it wished to, would have, and you know, they were caught just a matter of a year or so ago baptizing the relatives of Elie Wiesel shortly after her death. They baptized the mother of Barack Obama, and you can't tell me that that wasn't a deliberate finger in the eye.
Actually, I'm going to have to ask you to take a little bit of psilocybin here and put their limbs on for a second. Just do it. From their perspective, it is the most gracious act of love
Well, let me tell you my perspective.
I shit you not, dude.
I'm going to say something here that I don't think I've ever said in my life.
Go on, but
if I found out that some Mormon had baptized my mother or my father, I would get the shotgun out of the corner here. I'd put as many shells in it as I could get. I'd start walking until I found the person that baptized my mother and father into the Mormon church, and I'd blow their goddamn brains out.
I've never heard you say that.
No, you haven't.
Ever.
That is so offensive. That is so offensive. That these people, you know, go, love, enjoy your faith. Do what you do. But quit trying to impose it on people.
Don't mess with my grandma's bones. Yeah.
Right. Because Grant, that's necrophilia. Those Mormons who baptized Barack Obama's mama, who he had just witnessed die in a horrible, horrible battle with cancer, may as well have poured wine or milk or whatever in and taken the sacrament out of her empty skull. Now, I've probably just pissed a lot of people off.
Nah, tough shit. It's contentious times. Say what you mean.
But I would not, I would not be able to respond to it rationally. That's the whole point. That's why I'm saying what I'm saying. I would not be able to respond to that sort of vicious abuse of my loved ones. I mean, for all I know, I mean, my grandmother's been dead for the few, nearly 30 years now.
Mm-hmm.
For all I know, they've baptized her. I mentioned poor old O'Goat a little bit ago. For all I know, they've baptized him. I mean, my God, that man, what was it, Willard's father-in-law, Ann's daddy? The man was a notorious atheist, and he told them repeatedly, I don't want anything to do with that religion you're signing up with. He said that to Ann. And you know what they did? You know what they did the minute he died?
What did he do?
They baptized him into the Mormon church anyway.
Here's the Trump on that, whatever they choose to do on that. And I hope this is a comfort to you. Even in their own beliefs, at the foundation of this world is such a thing called free agency. If somebody rejects one doctrinal fold or another, you know, think about this as a matter before the universe and its intelligence collective. The elected choice of the individual trumps out against any ecclesiastic group or authority or anything else. That's why the notion of free agency is preeminent. It's like inherent to an intelligence. And I don't know if that's much comfort to you against your ire, you know, against a perceived offense. And this is where we're going to dip into, you know, if I go down that road, it is really perception. Okay.
Understand. My response was.
But the bottom line is, people choose what they harmonize with, what they want, what they're about. And no church can override that for you. You know, it's the only thing I can offer as comfort as my understanding of how things actually work.
Well, I remember when Gene told us the whole story about how, you know, he served as a proxy baptism.
Mm-hmm.
News Ninja Gene. And, you know, it's just, wow, it's just disturbing. And you know, I would never do something as violent as what I described. But it would drive me very nearly to that point. I mean, because see, my intellectual side, my rational side, my reasonable side, knows that everything they're preaching and the streets of gold stuff is all horse shit. It's all bullshit. Pure, unmitigated bullshit. Because nobody's come back. Nobody's told us what it's like over there. But I'm pretty sure that there aren't individual planets and magic underwear involved. Or streets of gold. are gates that are made out of pearls. You know, the pearly gates and the streets of gold are something that is, you know, that's a manifestation of the yearnings of a people who lived in dusty, dirty filth every day of their lives, and they just wanted, when they were dead, to go somewhere clean.
Sure. I mean, this is the human mind attempting to describe something that's probably...
But you know, it's not just that they baptize the dead. It's not just that they baptize the dead, Grant. They also baptize the dead and seal the dead to other people. Men. So that, for instance, my mother could be some Mormon's wife on their private planet. And I find the iconography and the imagery of that to be disgusting, revolting, putrid, hateful, and a violation of my mother's First Amendment rights, even though she be dead.
I gotta say something. Remember when you said that my estimation of the doings of the Council of Nicaea was off bomb? What you just said, I've never heard.
Yes, women are sealed to Mormon men so that they are their subservient wives in the afterlife.
No, take it back a step. Your grandma ain't sealed to no, you know, leg humper in the afterlife, dude.
Right, because it's made up bullshit.
Well, there's that, but even in doctrine, it ain't like that. I've never heard such a thing, dude. And I'm telling you.
Well, I've never heard such a thing. I've been told that by Mormons.
Now, what I have heard is a whole lot of stuff from other churches about Mormons. Okay? And they will come up with all kinds of crap, dude. That's what I know. But I've never heard that, oh, we're going to take your grandma and seal her to some leg humper in the afterlife. I've never heard anything even remotely similar to that. Not even close, dude. I'm telling you, as an ex-Mormon, okay? Ain't never heard it, man. Ever.
Well, I had current Mormons explain that to me.
Well, I don't know where they're from, but they're not hearing from the same pulpit I heard from, quite frankly. And I challenge them, scripturally, to show me, and in church doctrine, I challenge them to show me what they're talking about, because I ain't never heard it. I'm telling you. And so when I hear some of this stuff coming through, it's like, excuse me, I never heard this. And I was in for some years. Went on a mission, dude.
I mean, did you make it into the, like, 32nd degree Master Mason thing that they do?
It ain't quite like that. It ain't quite like that at all.
Well, I mean, I'm looking for a metaphor here.
Yeah, sure. Well, there's some infusion. Okay, I'll put it to you that way, and I'll stop there. But there ain't no this level, that level, you know, pay your $100,000, get to the next level. It's not like fucking Scientology. But I mean, there. I have never heard that. What I've heard is, okay, to baptize the dead, to give them the opportunity to hear something they didn't hear in mortality and make a choice. That's all I've ever heard of that. Now, as far as sealings go, that's a nuptial thing. That's between husband and wife stuff. I ain't gonna dig up your goddamn grandma.
Well, but you might get a...
And seal her.
Careful talking about my goddamn grandma there, okay?
I'm sorry.
That's okay. One
question went to one meeting, the other one went to a reverent meeting. I didn't say it right. My apologies.
But at any rate, one thing that is, I
would not dig up your grandma's bone.
But one thing, nobody gets dug
seal
up.
Her
but,
to, and seal her to some dude, okay, in a foreign religion.
But they acknowledge, you know, they also freely acknowledge that while they are not allowed to practice polygamy on Earth, that they get to practice polygamy on the next planet, and hence the multiple sealings.
I've heard this too, but you know, I'm a one-gal kind of guy. So I'm just not on board. I mean, you're talking to a guy who's an ex. I'm not on board. I'm not on the same page with a lot of the aspiration. But, you know, when I hear something off plumb, I got to call it in good conscience. you know, and that's really what this call is about.
Well, I don't.
I get a lot of this kicking up because of Mitt Romney. And the worst, you know, the worst part about this is whatever issues you have with Mormonism, I hate the fact that it's confused with Mitt fucking Shyster Romney, because he is if he were in my ward, you know, as a Mormon, he would be in low esteem for his practices among the children of God, okay? Putting them on the street. He goes and borrows money. He digests the body parts of where they...
Well, you know, that's one of the things that I...
And then he makes profit on the margin of the asset sales piece by piece. This is not a good ward member. This is not a good priesthood holder. And this is not a good man. And it even as an ex... Dude, Bob, as an ex-Mormon, it pains me to associate Mitt Romney with the Mormon Church, because they didn't even teach us anywhere near that kind of...
Well, and see, that's the thing. His ward elevated him to bishop. And as I said previously, if Rabbi Lieberman was running for the presidency of the United States, I would say that it is disturbing that we have a religious professional running for the office, running for the first magistracy. If Father so and so was running for the presidency, I would say we have a problem.
Absolutely.
You know, Brother Pastor Mike Huxterby and Brother Pat Robertson, Reverend Pat Robertson, ran for the presidency, and that gave me the turtle squirts. Okay? Because the idea of having a man who is consecrated to and ordained by some faith running my country, it makes my otherwise weird and knotty bowels get even weirder and more knotted up.
I agree. And you know what I frankly find a little bit appalling is the fact that Mitt Romney, well, it's not surprising, but it is appalling, that he lacked even the shred of class to recuse his ecclesiastic responsibilities as he pursued secular power. The man's got no goddamn class. I'm sorry, I gotta say it.
Well, no, he doesn't. That's because
he's gonna run for office. He needs to. In the Mormon Church, it's a lay clergy. You can be released from bishop, go do your secular power thing, and come back. But with something as high profile as the presidency, he should have been released.
And yet Grant, we can't get any. I'm the only person out here referring. It took a couple of years for the idea of referring to him as Willard to percolate upwards. You know, I'm just tired. You know, we got a president named Barack Hussein Obama who was not afraid to run under his own name for the presidency of the United States, but we got this creep. And he won't even run under his own name? It took a couple of years to get people to start referring to him as Willard. And I guess it'll take a couple of more to get people to start referring to him as Bishop Romney. Because he is one. And I don't want the prince of anybody's church running my country.
Thank you very much.
But, Andy...
No, I agree, Bob. This is why this dude should have been released a long time ago. He goes to pursue secular power. And as far as his pseudonyms, aliases, and such, you know, do you ever read that article about his, you know, his tax, the immense, you know, labyrinthine shell game he plays?
Oh, God, yes.
With his business dealings.
And it's very similar.
I gotta say this, Bob. This shyster motherfucker is gonna have his name attached to the Mormon Church. Now, why isn't the Mormon Church running with their wallet in their back pocket in hand from this dude? Because he's not going to help them, you know, to either ensconce themselves within the Fourth Reich, you know, a cozy...
Oh, but see, that's something we're not so sure about, Grant.
This guy's going to bring nothing but a shadow of doubt upon them, okay? And they should be running from this cat as fast as fucking possible.
Well, as Andy just noted in an email, and man, is this conversation ginning up some discussion in the email. Wow. He says, but Grant, the guy's a bishop. He consults with and guides other Mormons, many Mormons. He's a well-regarded poobah, yet he strips working people of their livelihoods, skins working people alive without even leaving them a bone. And it should be noted, and here I have a level of disagreement with you, I think, Grant, that, you know, and we will disagree without being disagreeable, as we have thus far. And that is this. Willard Romney's pursuit of wealth is well in line with the business models inside the church. I mean, here they are, a 501c3, but my God, they've got for-profit enterprises that would make Andrew Carnegie blush. Deseret this and Deseret that. I mean, they're all over the place. And the fear that many of us have, Andy, I think, speaks clearly. The fear is that he will answer to and promote Mormonism while he's in office before he answers to the best interests of our own country. He will answer to the Mormon hierarchy before answering to our Constitution or the We the People. His faith comes first. He said as much when he said, I talked to the people in Salt Lake, and they said it's okay for me to be pro-choice in a liberal state like Massachusetts. Question coming in from Philip. He says, please have Grant explain how he can provide historical context for a massacre by explaining that members of the Church of Latter-day Saints had been subjected to persecution and murder for believing in a different creed, and then assert that posthumous conversion to that different creed is not religious oppression and coercion of those who can no longer resist or defend themselves against such efforts, but is instead perceived as a gift. If church members wanted to practice their faith freely, how can any rational explanation be offered for depriving others of the choice of faith or lack of faith when they are unable to respond? To me, it is religious... Let me finish then. He says, to me, it is religious oppression by cowards who then want to assert that their right to practice their faith isn't respected. And he closes saying, having been raised Catholic until I was 15, I won't be calling in to provide the historical context for the Inquisition. So, you know, there's that. And, I mean, Jesus.
Let's take that one. Because what I was talking about with the treatment of the Mormons as they got started in the Midwest and what happened afterwards was really sort of an internal commentary on the nature of abuse cycles as it received, you know, and given back. And that was really what that was about. I just didn't make myself clear. I'm sorry I didn't make myself clear. That's really what was springing to mind, because it listed to me internally as, okay, this is what happens in personally, and I've seen this in other things, and now I see it writ large in every pogrom or religious persecution and everything else. You get the receiver, somehow it comes back and back and forth. And that was really what that machination was about. What was the other part of that?
Wow.
No, I'm just saying, that's what it was about. As I heard it, that's what I thought. That's what I was coming up with.
Well, this idea...
It's about the after-death baptisms, right?
Well, among other things. Philip continued, and he said, I'll be honest, Bob, I have difficulty listening to anyone who is or was a member of the Church of Latter-day Saints saying that Romney is not representative of or is unethical when... And I think this is something that, you know, there needs to be an open conversation about, and it's on the Mormons to deal with it. When Barack Obama could not have been a church member at birth, well, he could have been a church member, but he couldn't have been admitted to the priesthood because of his race. As with most organized churches, morality is subjective and practiced only when it is convenient by its followers. And as someone who is X, I think you can probably agree with that. You know, religions are not about individual souls. They are about social control.
I couldn't figure out for a very long time what it took till 1978 to acknowledge that the amount of melanin in your skin had nothing to do with your existential worth or your fitness or worthiness to hold an ecclesiastic priesthood or exert existential influence in the children of men.
Well, if we understand that the simplest answers are sometimes the most elegant and correct ones, it's because people like Brigham Young were bigots. You know, we're talking about the pre-Civil War United States. It's not like there was a clearly drawn line between North and South, and everybody north of the Mason-Dixie line was an abolitionist. You know, Brigham Young believed that people of dark skin were of inferior nature.
Mm-hmm.
And that and it took the church until 1978 to say, well, no, okay, I mean, you know, we're an expanding church, and we're going to run into a lot of brown-skinned people, and we can't just be always putting somebody white on top of them.
I think they were actually buckling to the change in the culture. They would no longer tolerate a racist essence.
So Selma was 1965, and it took 13 years?
Yep.
Well, but then again, you've got a Roman Catholic church that still can't let women be priests and won't let people wear a little latex thingy on their thingy to keep from spreading AIDS.
I have never figured out what that was about. I mean, I could never figure out why it took so long. I've never understood that. Even as a member, I could never understand that. Because the doctrine says this other thing, the teaching says this other thing, and it's more about the inside than the outside.
Well, and I mean, like I said, simple answers are often the most likely to be correct. That policy was enunciated by a bunch of bigots that people were afraid to gainsay. And you know, with that having been said, you know, Jim just wrote in and he said under the subject line "Views of Faith." He says, "Views of faith and dogma are akin to looking into a rearview mirror. Objects appear to be larger than they really are." Makes sense, and that's the truth. And I think we'll give Jim the last word on that. Grant, it's been a wonderful conversation. Truly, it has. And I'm sorry I went to that really, really dark and scary place, because I don't like even admitting that dark and scary place exists inside me.
You know what, Bob? It's dark and scary times. And this is the things we confront to sort them out.
I hope we do. That's what we're here for.
Okay.
Take care, Grant.
Love you, man. Take care.
All right. Thanks.
Bye
now. Can you imagine that conversation happening on Right Wing Radio? Nah, I didn't think so. Jay wrote in. Said, rating the relative absurdity of different religions is an exercise in complete silliness. They are simply all absurd, and all and God's children said amen. Before I go back to the phones, a note in from Kate. Seeing as how there won't be any shows for the rest of the week. Kate says, a couple of notes to end the week. Welcome, she says, to the previous emailer. Philip, you are most appreciated for the love and energy you put into the horn. Please call any time. And a note to Texas Betsy. Congratulations on your new job and your newly empty nest. Yay! All of the love and effort you contribute to this progressive romper room makes this a better place. Not every romper room has a brilliant resident Jewish mother. And finally to Maura. Sister, you are finally stardust for real. You gave us so many gifts, and the best way we can repay you is to keep the mic hot at the horn. Maybe our sisterhood will have equality over there. Love and light, dear sister. And thanks to everyone, Kate says, who has taken the stress off of Bob for another week. Betsy's right when she says he doesn't need the stress to make him sick. Thanks to all. Kate, on the front range. If I read every email that has come in the course of the conversation with Grant, we would not finish the program tonight. Although, Kate, I, in addition to giving Jim the last word on that topic, I'll also, we need Kate too. She says, I don't give a fuck who and why they were. I am concerned about who and what they are now. I've lived in and among them. The bishop is not what and who we need in the White House. I shudder at the prospect. Oh, God. Oh, Goddess. What has happened to us? Gotta say, though, Kate says, and she'd know, they sure got some nice pantries. Yeah. Harry says, stick to your guns. The Mormons are shysters and, more important, sickos. I wholeheartedly agree that baptizing dead victims of the Holocaust, including thousands of people who were not celebrities like Anne Frank, mere victims of the Holocaust, is plainly sick. It is cult behavior that reaches across religions and soils another religion, Judaism, by stealing the names of people of other religions, including Jewish victims of the Holocaust. As a Jew, Harry says, I see nothing loving about baptizing Jews who were killed by Nazis during the Holocaust. It is sickening, religiously horrific behavior. Like you, I think it is sick, totally sick. Yeah, because, you know, somewhere out there, now that they've baptized maybe a few thousand Holocaust victims, they can say, well, you know, the Mormons suffered under Hitler, too. Oh! Yeah, you see where it goes? Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, I'm glad I waited. It's your buddy, Mark.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for all help, brother.
Oh, hey, we all deserve each other's help, and those are your values that you you have somehow, however you got them. And for the last caller, I don't know what state he was calling from.
Oregon.
Oregon. Hopefully he doesn't have access to a federal firearms license, but I got the balls to back that up. I'm not Bob Kincaid. I'm a former U.S. Marine who thinks that separation of church and state just elaborated themselves, and the fact that he was able to call you and was actually so disrespectful with obviously knowing the age difference, he transplaced a lot of anger.
I don't think he was disrespectful to me, Mark. We've been having lovely conversations for a while.
Well, I have a younger voice for my age and my size. I'm a big son of a bitch, and I'm a little older and I sound, but that last guy, when you were you're always very diplomatic, which makes your radio show very neat to listen to, and you let people communicate with you, and you're very intelligent, and you educate me constantly. I was listening before he called in, but one thing I would just and this is not the reason I was on hold. I was calling in reference to 9/11, but he used the dude word, and he was like trying to talk to somebody his own age, whatever that may have been.
Nah, that's just that's just neighborly, Mark. That's just neighborly.
Well, that's kind of the rough edge, in my opinion, of the Generation X folks. And I'm an aggressive person, so I have to stand my ground on that. But when I think
let me just jump in real quick, because there's a nice way of saying dude and there's a bad way of saying dude. And that was just all offered, I thought in good faith, just as a point of reference. Let me finish.
Okay.
Because there's a bad way of saying dude. And by way of reference, we played a song, that featured a vocal by Lee Marvin earlier. One of my favorite films of all time is The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. Now,
Lee Marvin, yeah.
Okay. So we've got dude. Okay. And that's okay. I've got a dear friend. I pick up the phone, and the first word I hear from him is, dude. And,
right.
What are you doing? Hell, he may be listening right now. He may call in. Dude, what are you doing? That's what you'll hear. But then there's Lee Marvin in The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, and he's got that quirt in his hand, and he says, pick it up, dude.
Yep.
That's the fighting word dude that you're talking about.
Well, and of course, I'm partial to Lee Marvin. I grew up with Lee Marvin and Steve McQueen and Paul Newman. And
my father taught me to revere people like Lee Marvin and Glenn Ford and Ernest Borgnine. You know, people who got the shit shot out of them in the Second World War and managed to have a movie career afterward. Who's the guy that played Big Pappy in Oh Brother Where Art? Charles Durning. God, he was a Marine that just got the hell blown out of him in the Second World War, I think.
Right. Also, Eddie Albert from, I think, one of the Iwo Jima, maybe even, but, as a naval a boat officer, saved a lot of lives and went on. These people are so, and also Rod Serling, a sergeant in the U.S. Army in the European theater that he's, a lot of people came out of those horrendous circumstances and went in.
And see, I don't know if Mormons can get it, Mark. But for instance, I think of my uncle who didn't come home from Europe, sergeant in the army, and the idea that somebody would baptize him in death—that's just gross. I mean, that is so grossly offensive to my deeply Baptist family. You know, I'm not saying that it's happened.
Well,
maybe it has, maybe it hasn't. But it's.
Can I,
But they can't understand that it is. Why they can't understand that it is so deeply offensive is beyond me.
Well, and that's actually the only specific point I was going to zero in on was, and I thought you were being diplomatic when you used your grandmother as a role model, and you're a very peaceful person, and you've even poured me into a peaceful language through diplomacy, and I thank you for that. I'm diplomatic, but any case, but you know, you use the grandmother as a figure. What if you and I were talking about our children? Or what if we were talking about our wives? So that brings it even closer for the last guy. Again, I get back to his age, and I'm not calling to condemn him, but what I'm saying is you are the he. Bob Kincaid did us all a favor by using a grandmother. And actually, more specifically, your values go back to the love and the values that you got from the people that taught us these things that we saw and practiced, and the language and the love that was placed in our hearts with the way we were brought up. And this was the point I was trying to bring up, and you were also very diplomatic about even going to the extreme of someone, I don't even want to say his name, the guy from Germany, Hitler. But you know, so and I think, to me, you know, I still share with people, I'm only 54, but you know, there was a separation of church and state for a reason, and no offense to the last caller, I don't know anything about the Bible, I don't know anything about Mormonism, nor do I give a shit about it. And now they ended up in the mountains of nowhere where there's no, you know, there's no corn, there's no grain, there's no cattle, and that's where they had to end up living, and they got lucky and found a patch of grass, and whatever their deal was, I really don't care. To them, isolated, a bunch of white people, they're going to come up with a kind of a white way of looking at things. It's like many religions.
Well, consider with, you know, some of the background, and you mentioned this, and I think it's important, one of the background elements to the Mountain Meadows Massacre is the fact that the plan all along was to dress up like Indians and blame it on the Paiute.
That's racism right there.
Okay. And then what happened is during those week-long attacks, when they dressed up like Indians and went and tried to kill these innocents passing through, to the extent that any white settlers passing through native territory on the way to take more land were innocents. But what happened is along the way, one of them said, "Listen, I think some of them figured out we're white folks." And what followed from that was, well, then they've all got to die. And really, you know, the massacre part is what happens on the last day, on September the 11th, 1857, when they coerce, when they coax them to lay down their weapons on the promise of water and feed for their animals, and then they round them up and, at a word, murder them. When a lieutenant or a captain in the United States Army a couple of years later went to the scene of the massacre, Mark, he said it was the most horrible thing he had ever seen in his life, that he found women with babies in their arms, and there were nothing but little bones left where they had been scattered by the carrion hunters of that region, be they wolves or coyotes or buzzards or whatnot. It was cold-blooded murder on September 11th, 1857.
It was also,
and I'll be honest, Mark, I'm really disturbed with myself. I am deeply disturbed with myself that I would go there and make that shotgun reference.
No, actually, Bob, you were defending love. Really, I mean, I don't mean, I'm not an analysis, whatever, but I'm saying you were defending your own perception of love,
But I don't understand in my own heart why I would go there, because I am so thoroughly committed to nonviolence. I am thoroughly committed to the principles laid down by Dr. King, by Gandhi, by Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, and then that just burbles out of me? What the hell happened? What was wrong? Something went sideways in my brain. That's sick, too.
Well, it is, and actually the last caller didn't deny that connection. I'm going to go back there and say it again, Bob. He can't help his age or the way. He was just very... He was almost a little too preachistic, and I wrote down some words, and you know, you've talked about that aspect of that perception of a religion before, and how that would irritate you if someone did that to your family member. And you didn't go to that point, but it is something that you've wrestled with because of the love that you've had for the people that you saw their values. You saw, Bob, you grew up with a family that you loved dearly, that helped produce the people that you and I both are. And however we get to where we are at, or what we choose to accept and what we choose to kick out, and no, and actually some of your toughest people are actually, I'm just saying that you have mentioned it in the past, and he got you to cross over that line, but you were also, you're also psychologically in control, where you're able to say, you backstepped diplomatically, saying that as a reasonable, cogent person that you would choose not that path, but that's dishumanizing and inhumanizing that behavior is, and how antiseptic it is. They had nothing to do specifically with a grandmother or grandfather or your own father, but that's the pervasiveness of the kooky religions all together. They go places that transcend the personal love we have for people, and we knew how we perceived, how we knew how these people got to be who they were, and how they were shaped by their region, and they didn't take off to the hills of a pile of rocks and set up a German colony. I say that, and that's a racist comment, but I've got to get this off my chest, and I'd like to go to the Bin Laden thing in 9/11 if I could. But this young man used words like labyrinthine, free agency, existential work, existential influence, and I would say I have never heard those English words really put together, and that shows me that he does have some severe input from somewhere, and he's still wrestling with it, and he reemphasized that. But the fact he's still wrestling with it and did not know some of the things that we were able to share with him, yourself specifically, and other folks I got on the internet that shored up perspectives concerning that kooky perception of a religion, that he didn't know those things is because he was kept at a distance. That's why they are a threat with the
business. Well, and that is Mark, that is not unique to that particular faith. I mean, for instance, I remember a very long time ago, and it's before you became a listener, we had a brilliant scholar on this program and a million selling author by the name of Dr. Bart Ehrman. He's a PhD, I think he's still of religious studies. I think he's still at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. And this guy was a fundamentalist. He started out at the Moody Bible Institute, and then he got his master's degree at Princeton. And, you know, he was raised in fundamentalism, okay, just like I was. And he was talking about all these things that are, for instance, in the New Testament that weren't there in the original document. And we know by real scholarship and by real research that they weren't there, okay? And I said, but Dr. Ehrman, everybody, all the scholars know this? He goes, absolutely. I said, but, and so if you go to Bible school to become a preacher, they teach you this? Absolutely. He says, and I said to him, but they don't pass it on to the congregation? Absolutely not. Because you don't want to smarten them up. It's hard enough keeping it going as it is. And it matters not whether that be Roman Catholicism, whether it be Mormonism, whether it be Presbyterianism, Episcopalianism, Lutheranism, Baptist, Methodist. It doesn't matter. All that stuff is known, but they don't tell the congregation because religion has always deemed that knowledge is dangerous.
Well, it's why
little Roman Catholics of the Middle Ages were not allowed to read the Bible. They had to have it read to them by a priest who, at least theoretically, understood Latin.
Well, they may start figuring it out. Would be the key. It's the same description. So I would say I have to say I've never said this to you on your show before. I never will, never have, and don't give a fuck about a Bible. I don't give a shit what kind of Bible it is, or what kind of Torah it is, or whatever kind of Quran it is, or whatever kooky shit. You can't force. I don't even do the Pledge of Allegiance. But what I do know, a federal standpoint, is white people left England primarily because the Queen of England used the Church of England the peasants down. And Scottish people beat the shit out of some white peasants. And that's a beautiful thing because they were ignorant.
And let's also bear in mind that the Puritans were unbearable. They were unbearable. They were god awful proselytizers. They walked around telling people that belonged to the Church of England that they were going to hell because the Puritans were the elect. And
they were the Mujahideen, Bob.
They were the Taliban of their day.
they all become Talibanistic though.
Look at what happens when the Puritans get hold of the English government under Cromwell. What's the difference between Cromwell and some blind sheikh in the Taliban? Not much more than skin tone and the headgear.
Yeah, they just didn't have a soccer stadium, so they could execute women.
But they made do. You know, it was the London Bridge and the play. You know, they had all these pointy things on the, and it was great for putting people's heads on. You know, it's one of those great compare and contrast moments. You know, the Spanish arrived in Tenochtitlan and were horrified to see human sacrifice going on. You know, we know it because they wrote how horrified they were. And yet, if they sailed back across the ocean blue and walked into any of their cities, be they Seville or Madrid or Barcelona, what would be the first thing they saw when they walked up to the city gates, Mark? A bunch of people's heads on pikes. You know, I noted that this is September 11th, and there's a lot of nasty crap that's happened on September 11th over the years. Let's see. Yeah, September 11th, 1609. I compiled some notes earlier today. September 11th, 1609. Expulsion order announced against the Moriscos of Valencia, beginning the expulsion of all of Spain's Moriscos. That means people of either Islamic faith or Arabic descent.
Right, sure. The Moors. Get them out.
Gotta go. Goodbye now. Thanks for all the money. Thanks. By the way, thanks for the indoor plumbing. We white people are no longer shitting in buckets because of you. Goodbye now.
Thanks for the mathematics and the food.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for that algebra. Generations of little children will curse your name.
Correct.
Hey, Mark, I got a roll, but it's been a great conversation. Thank you very much.
Hey, Bob, can I just say, and I thank you, and I know you want to get to other callers, so I'm going to hang up after this. So I just remind the listeners that the Carlyle Investment Group, 13% of it is owned by the Bin Laden Investment Group. And that's
And all of this stuff does kind of merge because it bears mentioning that Bain Capital owns a significant portion of Clear Channel, which in turn owns a significant portion of the broadcast licenses of the United States of America radio spectrum.
You know why Barack Obama called President Bush immediately after killing Osama bin Laden, Bob, the first person he called?
No, why?
Well, he had to let him know one of his employees had just gotten killed. Anyway, Bob, I'll hang up and keep listening.
Oh, nice shot. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, take care. Bye now. Now, some of y'all gave up. That's not how conversation radio works. You gotta stick around. Yeah, you will get your shot. Tamara, whom we've heard from periodically, emailed, and I think this is important. She says in the subject line of the email, yeah, Mountain Meadows was a false flag episode. And she continues in the body of the email, and part of the history. She continues, the first time my mom heard the Mountain Meadows story, she called the person who relayed it to her a liar. I was raised, Tamara says, I was raised Mormon, too, and raw emotions are what happen when we're willing to talk about it for both sides. Tamara says, Grant is still wrestling with stuff, and so am I. But you, Bob, are right on the facts. Thank you. Thank you. John Fox popped into the chat room and sent me a piece from the Raw Story. Rawstory.com. And he says, yeah, they, meaning the Mormons, want to rebuild the U.S. in an image that should frighten all. Uh, And the story John sent me from Raw Story is this. Headline, Ann Romney, remember Ann Romney, the one who told us that she has a real marriage with Bishop Willard? Ann Romney is being criticized because guess where she plans to go? Why, she's going to go and deliver an address at the Values Voter Summit. I'll read to you directly from the text. Progressive groups are questioning Ann Romney's scheduled appearance at the upcoming Values Voter Summit, an event hosted by organizations they say demonize the LGBT community. The Romney campaign must have its reasons, but it sure seems like an odd way to deploy Ann Romney, Josh Glassdetter of Right Wing Watch said. No one really expected Mitt Romney to show for the event. Too radical, too close to the election. That's why when the conference schedule was recently posted, it was a shock to see not only Romney on the lineup, but Ann Romney. This is a little clavern that's organized by the Family Research Council and has co-sponsors like the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi. Let's see. This year's lineup includes 1L Michelle Bachman, Eric Cantor, Frank Gaffney, Glenn Beck, and Rick Frothy Mixture Santorum, among others, the article notes. The Family Research Council has published, as John Fox notes to me, has published the statements like this. Brian Fisher, the AFA's Director of Issue Analysis, and you've heard him on this program, he's the one that wants all the grizzly bears killed for Jesus. No, really. In 2010, Brian Fisher wrote, and I quote, "Homosexuality gave us Adolf Hitler, and homosexuals in the military gave us the brown shirts, the Nazi war machine, and 6 million dead Jews." Wow. And you think there's no... By the way, Kate has awarded tonight's toaster. She says, "Good one, Mark. One of your employees just got it." That, says Kate, is the toaster for tonight. Brushed stainless, 4 slots, extra wide for bagels. I can't help but concur. So Ann Real Marriage Romney is going to go and explain to people that she deems to be heretics or heathens or what are they? Whatever they are, how nasty gay people are. And see, here's another one of those baptizing the dead moments, and don't tell me it doesn't happen. Let's say you spend your life on this earth being gay, or lesbian, or bisexual, or transgendered, or queer questioning, and you happen to be Mormon, and you die. You get, or maybe you're not Mormon. Here, yeah, let's make it more horrifying. You're not Mormon, and you get dead, and some Mormon baptizes you straight so that you can have a proper spouse in the afterlife on some planet somewhere, you know, some imaginary planet. Again, I recognize that this is all hokum horseshit. But it is deeply offensive to the living. The dead are dead. They don't care. That's why they're dead. They don't care. They're not capable of caring. They're dead. But the living are capable of caring. If you knew that in life, your grandmother, who had survived the Holocaust, and spent her life a deeply observant Orthodox Jew, had been baptized as a gift of the Mormon Church into Mormonism, would the fact that it's deemed to be a gift and a sacrament be any solace? Why should the burden be upon the person whose loved one was dead baptized? Why should the burden be on them to be accepting of the sick and twisted eccentricities of this bunch
Nah, see, it don't wash. It don't wash. I'm just saying.
Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob. How you doing?
Hey, Jim. How are you?
Oh, it's been quite a night, hasn't it?
Well, you know, we were cruising along, and then we ran off over there. It sort of went over a cliff.
Well, you know, icebergs do pop up from the sea, that's for sure.
Well, you know, it's probably the action of those Titanic plates, Jim.
It could be. You know, I can't say any more or contribute more than what I said to you or wrote to you in my email. And the only thing I can say is an addendum to present conversation is my heart and my thoughts go out to the victims of September the 11th and their families.
Indeed.
And the diseases that they're still dealing with.
And against against relief for which Paul Ryan voted. Yeah, he voted against support for people still suffering from the after effects of September 11th, 2001.
I know. They just changed the fact about there are 39 different types of cancer. They said that no, 9/11 and its aftermath could not have contributed to, but at least they, over the past year, they have been able to change that, and I'm glad they did. But like I say, my heart goes out to the people who died in the Twin Towers and in Shanksville and the Pentagon and... Lord only knows what else is coming in the aftermath. But that's where my feelings are today and tonight.
And I think that shows your heart to be in the right place, Jim.
Well, it's always been.
The only reason I didn't do a lot about September 11th, 2001 is because I'm operating under the presumption that practically every program that has a human being behind a microphone today has. And I don't know what more there is to add to that conversation, except to point out that September 11th is apparently a very, very unlucky day. But there's only 365 days in the calendar, so there's probably other crappy things that happened on September 10th and September 12th.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Throughout history.
Absolutely. And...
You know, I remember being mortified to find out that... I don't think it was Agnes, but some member of my family shares a birthday with Chairman Mao.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, Mao. That explains some things, but of course it doesn't.
One more comment. Some comment was made about the Anglican Church and the Puritans and things like that. No, I would not have liked to have been an Anglican under the rule of Oliver Cromwell.
No, because you would have been a former Anglican.
Yeah, I would have sort of been hoisted on some type of thing that Cromwell and his people would have thought that would be my just desserts, but I would have absolutely prefer to have lived as Charles II did, who said, I just want to live as I have died, to die as I've lived, in bed.
Indeed.
Good night.
Take care, Jim. Thank you.
Bye
now. That gets us pretty close to the end of the program, unless somebody wants to get one last call in. I can only apologize again for my little outburst of temper there. I'm ashamed of myself. I hold myself as being better than that. I hold myself up as being, I can't explain why that happened inside me. I can't explain where that came from inside me and then just burbled out of my mouth. I try not to do word vomit on the program. But it did, and I apologize to you all, and I don't make promises, but I will do everything in my power to see that that never, ever happens again. That's all I can say. You know, I don't subscribe to any religions, and I don't do any creeds. And, you know, mumbling mea culpa, mea culpa, mea maxima culpa, don't do diddly. But I'm sorry, and I'll try not to do it again. Sincerely so. Because I hold myself to a higher standard than that. I just do. And so I'm sorry. And I can't say it often enough. Because even talking about something that way, seems to me, in my mind, almost as evil as actually doing it. So I hope you can all forgive me. Whether you ascribe, because see, that's the neat thing about being non-believers. We can do things like forgiving, and we don't do it because we're afraid that somebody's going to cast us into a burning sea of fire that God made for us because he loves us. We can just do it because it's the right and indeed the human thing to do. So I apologize. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Hey, Preston.
Real quickly, I just wanted to say, you know, don't be too hard on yourself. I mean, we all misspeak. We all misphrase things. I mean, I can't call into a radio show and talk for 2 minutes without coming away saying, oh, man, I wish I hadn't said it that way.
Well, I'm just grateful that that there's not some massive organization of right-wingers out there who will put something up on some weirdo website tomorrow that says Bob Kincaid wants to blow away Mormons, because I don't. You know,
right.
You know, that's one of the blessings of having a very close-knit little family here.
Right, right. And, you know, they'd kind of be so hypocritical themselves because they're so much in favor of blowing away Muslims.
Right, and see, that's what's so disturbing to me about it, Preston. I went to that filthy place where they live. And I can't, I mean, I feel like I need a shower or something, but they live like that every day.
You know, it's their career, it's an ideology, and they're very much entrenched in it, and it's sad to see. But again, when your country invests so much in weapons, the military-industrial complex, you know, a lot of people are on the receiving end of those guns. So I wanted to take a moment also to remember the people of that horrific attack on 9/11, and also the people who have been, you know, suffering from the policies that emanate from places like the Pentagon. And, you know, we need to remember those trade sanctions that were put on Iraq and how our Air Force was simultaneously bombing its water and sewage system, which led to the deaths of 500,000 children under the age of 5 by UN estimates. Also, I want to note the passing of Larry Gibson.
Thank you. Thank you.
And thank you to Jeff Biggers for the wonderful remembrance he did on Common Dreams. And one last comment, Bob. The Sierra Club has a wonderful piece on another effort in West Virginia to stop mountaintop removal and protect their outdoor adventure, their joyful and sustainable outdoor adventure economy in Fayetteville.
I saw that. That's a beautiful piece.
I'll post it to your Facebook page.
Do please, and I'm glad you brought it up. I'll go ahead and hang up, Preston, but thank you very much,
okay.
And I'm sorry for the short time, but I hope we'll talk soon.
Peace.
Bye now.
Bye.
Preston mentioned Larry Gibson. And I should note that on Thursday at noon in Lafayette Park in Washington, D.C., that's where I'm going to be, and it is a Stand with Appalachia Day brought about by a coalition of folks led by Earth Justice. And I will be proud to be attending. And it will also serve as a memorial to Larry Gibson, who died on Sunday on his beloved little last remaining acres of Cayford Mountain. We miss him, and he was a mighty good man. And Grant saying at the end that he's sorry to have drawn that out of me, and he says, my apologies, and no apologies are necessary, Grant. We can disagree without being disagreeable here, but my failings are my own. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. You who contribute your time, your energies, your thoughts, and yes, your finances, thank you. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acact.org. Also go to signon.org and sign the petition, End Appalachia's Agony. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Here comes Rick Smith on the horn.